It is Jeff Merrick in studio. This is a nice surprise.
Yeah, I was going to do phone, but I'm coming down to do some pods with Elliot. So I'm like, hey, man, let's go see the boys.
All right.
And what do you got this week? What's
we got a lot because we did like 20 interviews last week in Chicago at the car wash. So I think today we're releasing one with Matthew Barzal, Jack Eichel.
I got one more name.
Oh, do you have the list?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Oh, do oh, you
Tory Krug.
Oh, he was really good, wow. too. Yeah, you know what? That guy.
What's he like?
Krug's an interesting guy. So, I spent half of my youth in Livonia, Michigan. Half my family's lives there. And so he's from Livonia. So we spent a time talking about Mike Modano and Ryan Kessler and the Livonia kids. But what I like about him is, even though no one talks about how he's too small to play in the NHL and defensemen that are that small can't play in the NHL as well, even though that conversation is in the rearview mirror for everybody and Tory Krug is, you know, not just a legit NHLer, but, you know, bordering on an elite-level NHLer. Hello, 60 points a season, something Chara has never done. He still skates with that chip on his shoulder. Like, he's still, in his mind, motivated by everyone saying, you don't belong here. I don't, and I said to him after, I'm like, Tory, with all due respect, I don't know one hockey person who would say that you don't belong on the first unit with the Boston Bruins. I can't name one
person. But it's
person.
What he heard growing up.
It's what he heard growing up.
Sticks with
Scotty, he can't let go of it. He's a really interesting guy, and that guy is going to get paid when his contract expires this year. That guy. You talk about defenseman ringing the bell? Tory Krug.
You think he's number one on that team once?
I think he's the best defenseman on that team right now.
Better than McAvoy.
Yeah, I do. And that's an interesting. So how'd you like to be Charlie McAvoy right now, seeing what Werenski signed for? And seeing what Provorov signed for. So if you have visions of $8.5 million dancing in your head, if you're Charlie McAvoy, you've just seen two contemporaries sign for significantly less than that.
But you'd be looking, I would think, at Werenski term, right? Because you're looking for another payday.
Oh yeah.
ASAP.
And that's the thing now with a lot of. I mean Matthews was the touchstone for a lot of these guys. You know, why max out? You know, especially, you know, you look at the U.S. TV deal and more money coming into the system with gambling. Why would you not want to just do short-term deals and keep ringing the bell?
Well, and I keep
why
coming
would you want
back,
to lock in?
I keep coming back to the age thing, too. I mean, why would you want to wait until you're 28, 29 to go to unrestricted free agency?
No, man.
Like, Jeff, 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, how 29, 30, 31-year-olds were viewed was way different than how they're viewed now. Where are we going to be 8 years from now?
Yeah.
Like, 31-year-olds... be handing out walkers.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know what? You know where you see it as well, Scotty? You don't just see it on the ice, but there's been an age turnover, and there's still plenty of older general managers around the NHL, but you're seeing it behind the bench, and you're seeing it at the GM level as well, where once upon a time, your general manager was in his 60s and your coach was in his 50s. Now your GM is in his 50s and your coach is in his 40s. Like at every single level of the game, it is getting younger. We focus so much just on the ice. I mean, look around. Everywhere it's getting younger. And I think a lot of it is, you know, the older you get, the more hardened you get in your ideas. And the minute that you're cemented in your ideas, you're not growing anymore. Alan Watts has, you know, the wonderful saying, unlearn something daily. And if you're not able to reevaluate all of your presumptions in sports or anything in life for that matter, you get left in the dust fast. And you see that at every level of hockey right now.
And now the question that everyone's been talking about, I'm sure you haven't heard anything about it, but...
Can I read the tweet? Or is this where we're going?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Do you want to... Is this where you're taking it?
Yeah, I was going to get right into it.
Okay.
You're a much better host than me, by the way, because you actually have something to prompt your co-hosts with.
No,
when I'm with Ziggy, I just sort of dog face him and go, Zig?
No. This is all Travis McKenzie. Travis understands that even though it's 2019, I need visuals like pieces of paper. The other thing is these TV lights bounce off this computer, like off the glass table, Jeff. So when I'm looking at the computer screen here, sometimes I can see it, sometimes I can't.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So anyway, my whining's done.
It is Friday.
Chris Johnston, our good buddy.
Yes, sir.
10:02 a.m. With the usual caveat that nothing is done until it's done, it sounds like there's been some progress in contract talks between the Leafs and Mitch Marner.
And where do we go from here? And we've been talking about it a lot, but there isn't any more money on the table at a long-term deal.
Correct.
So if there is movement or there is talks, it's going to have to be for a shorter-term deal But are they going to go to that crazy number in the last year?
I just got a text at, when was yours time stamped?
10:02 a.m.
So this is 10:46. This is the text, and I won't tell you who it is, but I'll read it verbatim. Because I asked, long-term, short-term? Because we know this is Marner Day around Maple Leafs camp. Today, they're taking a run at Marner today. Like, they're trying to get this done. And so I sent the text, long-term, short-term. This is the text back. I think three if it gets done. I think that's what we're looking at.
And then what's
for
that?
Mitch Marner.
And then what's that last year? Some are saying they want 15 on the third year.
Like, well, I don't think the Maple Leafs want to QO Mitch Marner at 15 when all this is done. I think like, I'm pretty sure they don't want to QO him at 15.
Yeah, it's. I mean, what do you do with what do you do in that third year?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, and I don't want to throw darts at it. It is such a...
What's the number? Like, 3 and 27?
I'm
just trying to come up...
I'm still...
You know, I know it was in the 8 to 9 neighborhood. The rumors were, at least, on a three-year deal.
I'm still shocked he hasn't signed the 7-year 11. I didn't see them going into 10.
I just didn't see them... I don't think he wants to wait until he's 28 to hit unrestricted free agency.
I'm with Scotty in this one.
Because, Zigo, you know, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but you can't do a 4-year deal because it walks him to unrestricted free agency at first opportunity. You can't do 5 because it lines him up with Austin and Nylander. Yeah. And then it's really 3, 6, or 7.
I'm shocked he's missing with that on the table. I didn't think the Leafs were going to go there to 11. So that's maybe why I'm a little bit more shocked.
But you're buying UFA years.
And I understand that.
Long term, and you balance it at 11.
Well, here's the thing. I feel like I'm by myself here where I don't see a big difference between wingers and centermen. I don't see a value in your centermen more than your wingers. I used to when I played, and now that I'm watching a lot more, I don't know if it's the way the game's changed, and I don't see a top 6 either. I'm a top 9 guy. Are you in your top 9?
Okay, but what about goals and assists?
Goals, you're always going to favor goals when you're looking at a guy and you want to value what he does. But centermen or wingers, some of the teams I like in the NHL, I don't know who's in center, who's at wing. When I'm watching a game, I don't know.
I know. It's all, this is the F1, this is the F2. It's
and
not
they
this
go
the center jobs, so it's the winger. I get that. And I think... It sort of winks at a bigger discussion, which we're now just starting to have, which is at what point are we approaching the conversation of when does positionless hockey start in the NHL? Sure, you line up for the draw, and after that, it's just depending on whatever the situation is, whichever player is the closest, you assume that traditional role of whatever that position normally would do. But as the game is played now, listen, Ziggy, you played it. I didn't. The center has more responsibilities.
Yes.
And also, if you're going to, I mean, the comparison is always made between Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews and who deserves more. You know, don't you pay more for the player who's also a scoring threat and not just a playmaker?
I do, but Mitch Marner, I know he doesn't fit all the stats and analytics with driving offense, but he does stuff that you can't track. I know a lot of the analytics are how many zone exits, how many zone entries, right? But there's a lot of stuff analytics does not pick up, and I'm higher on Mitch Marner than a lot of people.
First of all, I think the Maple Leafs internally are past the, and I can't believe I'm using this phrase, traditional analytics. Like, I think they've all moved past Corsi, for example. It's almost like, it's not the pejorative that plus minus has become around the NHL, but it's starting to get there. So I think that, you know, a lot of the underlying information that the Maple Leafs use to determine value of a player is not something that's probably widely published, right? Like, and this will start to come out as the years go on, but I think they're past that traditional way of valuing players in the analytics community. So I don't know exactly how they value Mitch Marner. It seems as if it's higher than some of the more traditional analytic-based analysts would, who put his number at 8.5, guys. Like, mm-hmm. I think when you look at how players are valued by traditional analytics, they're saying, yeah, he's probably somewhere in that $8 million range. The Maple Leafs aren't using the analytics that we're reading on the internet. They have their own department. They have their own eyeballs. They have their own way to value players. And we don't know what that is. That's not made public. That is private information held by the Maple Leafs.
Yeah. And players are using internalized comparables now as opposed to going around the league.
Yeah.
Jeff, I mean...
Well, this is the thing.
I think Mitch Zigo is... It's to his advantage that the Leafs have two guys making eight figures right now, specifically Austin, because that's the comp. I think if Braden Point was a Maple Leaf and Mitch Marner was a Lightning,
yep,
right now, same situation, flip the jerseys. What's Braden Point asking for?
More than Marner. Because he's a scoring threat.
Right. But he is limited.
He's the one
by
guy.
Kucherov, Stamkos. Tampa has a better internal cap.
I'm not saying Mitch isn't as good or better, but right now, I like him more than Marner. If I had to pick one guy,
Point
I'm picking
Marner?
Point.
Yeah.
I don't know. He does a lot more.
Well, he had two less points, but 41 goals.
Mm-hmm. He's a shooting threat. He's wildly... here's the thing about Marner. Marner brings you out of your seat four times a game. That's the thing. He is spectacular. You know, the best quote that I ever heard about Mitch Marner, I think this is a Lindsay Hofford quote, I think. Mitch Marner doesn't make the right play. He makes the better play. He makes the play that when he starts making it, you look at it, you go, oh, no, what is he going to blow? Yes, of course. That's you have those moments with Mitch Marner. He does things that nobody else even thinks about.
Now, how about if he doesn't start? Does Tavares struggle at all to start the season? Who would miss who more?
I don't know. Bringing back, let's see, who else is he? Who has he made rich? P.A. Parenteau.
Matty Molson.
Matt Molson. Can you sneak Josh Bailey over? You want to get Kyle Oposo from Buffalo? John Tavares has a history of doing, he's the wing whisperer. He makes wingers.
So he does.
That's John Tavares.
So did Tavares make Marner who he is today?
No,
or was this going to happen on his own? Where this happened with Mitch Marner, the rise of Mitch Marner, would it have happened without 91 in the middle?
I think the saner thing to say is, I think John Tavares helped Mitch Marner more than Mitch Marner helped John Tavares, but that is a hand-to-glove relationship. I don't think this was, I'm not comparing Mitch Marner to P.A. Parenteau or Matt Moles. I'm not, but... You know, the relationship is more when you look at the track record of what John Tavares has done his entire career. I'm going back to junior, right? And playing in Oshawa, and all of a sudden, Cal Clutterbuck's an elite player in the OHL, just riding shotgun with JT in Oshawa. This is what John Tavares has always done. And how wonderful a situation is it where you have someone as special as Mitch Marner riding shotgun with him. But who influenced who more, or who helped who more? Looks like 91 more so than 93.
Because that's what the numbers suggest.
16. Yeah.
It is.
Scott MacArthur, Mike Zigomanis, Sportsnet Today, Jeff Merrick with us in studio. And we're doing what we do, Jeff, which is looking at this in an individual silo. So we dealt with the Nylander situation last year. We're dealing with the Marner thing now. There's a bigger picture here. It'll be more discussed as we get going here, but who the hell's going to be play defense for this team 2020, 2021 and onward?
Mm-hmm.
Because Barry's unrestricted. And if he does what everybody says he's going to do with the quality of forwards around him this year and being on the power play, he's going to want a ton of money. Jake Muzzin at 30 years old will become an unrestricted free agent. Cody Ceci, I think, is a rung or two on the ladder beneath, but is still a factor here as a looming unrestricted free agent. Is Sandin going to be ready to jump in? Are you going to be ready to give Dermott 20-plus minutes a night and rely on him? What's Liljegren going to be? Morgan Riley, set him aside for a second. You've got to decide what your defense is going to look like, how you figure that with regard to your cap issue. If you have four players assuming about half of your salary cap, which is the way this thing is trending. So that's the 2020 summer problem. Beyond that, you've got Freddie, who's unrestricted two summers from now, and then Morgan, who's going to want to raise and earn one and deserve one, we would presume, three summers from now. So we can look at this in an individual silo. Kyle Dubas and his front office are looking at Mitch Marner, but they've also got all of this other stuff coming down the pipe. I mean, it just seems to be an unending business equation here for the Toronto Maple Leafs. This is what the salary cap has done.
This is the problem the Maple Leafs have wanted to have for a long time. What do we do with all these good players?
But not getting rid of any of them would be nice if not having to move on.
Eventually, you do need
to have...
would be
part of the solution.
You do need to have some internal solutions, right? And you're not going to be a successful hockey team unless you get high production from guys on their entry-level deals. And I think Scotty, that's where you look at it and you say, when's Rasmus Sandin ready? What's the Travis Dermott contract going to look like? I would have to believe... whether it's from the Maple Leafs' point of view or from Orr Wasserman, those Dermott discussions have to be happening right now. And what's the speculation on where's his value going to be? I think Dermott is the wild card in all this. And how good can this guy be? And when did the Maple Leafs lock him in? And if they're sane, should they not do that earlier than wait later on this season?
Okay, so here's a take.
Okay.
Agree or disagree? One of... Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, John Tavares, William Nylander will not be a Maple Leaf by this time next year.
I think they all will.
You think they all still will be, and you think that there will be a way...
Nylander, Marner, and what? Who?
The big four. JT and Austin.
Yeah, the big four. And my point being is that you're going to have to pay somebody. You can't be a contending team and be relying on kids as young as Dermott and Sandin and maybe even Liljegren to eat up huge chunks of your defensive minutes in 2020, 2021. You know,
that's why I say Dermott's the wild card. How good can this guy be?
How quickly and
where does he plateau at? You know, how quickly can he get to that spot? Like, how quick is there a chance that Travis Dermott is going to be a first pairing player for the Toronto Maple Leafs? And if so, how fast?
And the answer to that question is yes, in the very same way that you would have said the same thing about Jake Gardner 7 years ago, right? Like, there's one of two ways this could go for Dermott. He could be that guy, or he could be more the Gardner type, who's middle pair, prone to mistakes in his own end, can frustrate you at times, but you see it.
The thing about Dermott, I can still recall having a conversation with Jay McKee in Erie about him when he played there, where his nickname was the ankle breaker, where he would just, I mean, the pivots, like the potential is all there for Dermott, to be a better version of Jake Gardner. Jake Gardner, minus the spectacular turnovers, but still the zone exit machine and someone that can probably play on your power play as well.
Yeah, I like him a lot. He's your meat and potatoes kind of D.
He's a skater, Ziggy. The thing about the Maple Leafs, they went into the draft last year saying the same thing. If this guy can't skate, put him on the do not draft list. It is skating with the Maple Leafs, period.
And you have to move the puck, and we've seen that. This team's not successful unless you have puck-moving D. And this forward group struggles a lot when we've seen the back end, some of the top guys out of the lineup. But with Dermott, he does a lot of things I like as a coach. You kind of know what you're getting out of him. If you're looking at analytics, he's a star because it's like everything out. He gets the puck. It's on net. He gets the red line. It's
puck goes
in,
puck goes out. Puck goes in, puck goes out.
And you want that. You want that consistency out of your player because you know what you're getting. And I'd prefer that than somebody maybe a little bit better, more skill, but I don't know what I'm getting out of him every day. So that's one of Dermott's strengths, is that you kind of know what you got out of him every game. I mean, does he ever have a bad game? When did you see him this year cough a puck up? I can't even think of anything. So it's that same thing. And what's the ceiling, like you're saying? I don't like the Gardner comparison.
It's just because of the skating, though. Scotty's
because they're skating.
It's the skating.
They're different players. Gardner's really offensive. He can see things a lot of guys don't see. He hangs on the puck. A little bit of that riverboat in him, gambler, and it's different players. But yeah, with Dermott, you don't know. But back to salary cap issues, it's almost at the point now where if you have a good player, you almost want to keep them in the minors for 2 years and don't bring them till their third year. how good of a year can you have where we have to pay you $12 million a year? Mm-hmm. It's almost at that situation where you have to either bury guys in the minors to start their career, or you got to find these value players. You got to find your Trevor Moores.
Well, the one way, and the same teams have clued to this and are doing it now more so than ever. When someone in your quote-unquote bottom six has a wonderful season, the answer is not to pay that guy. The answer is to get another guy like that. So every time you shuffle out, you know, Tyler Ennis, you bring in a Kenny Agostino, right? You don't pay Tyler Ennis. You bring another Tyler Ennis in. It's the death of the middle class.
You right? can't have Connor Brown making more than $2 million a year and playing right wing on your fourth line.
It's you can't afford that luxury. You can't. You find another one.
If Jake Gardner's contract, the Leafs offered Jake Gardner this contract during the season, would he have signed it?
No.
What, 4-16-2 or whatever it is?
No.
He doesn't sign.
I don't think so.
So it wasn't the number. It was he was not coming back to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, but there were...
No, but he was... There were people saying he was
a $7 million
defenseman. Oh, wait,
I thought he was getting
puck,
six.
Puck-moving defenseman. Hello, hey, Vancouver's looking to redo their defense. That's an easy fit, isn't it?
And
like everybody was saying, like, there's no way the Leafs are going to afford this guy.
And was it the fact that they didn't like his game this past year, or what's happened to his game? Or is it just, did he get muscled out by the salary cap? Because, you know, there's certain players.
Or was there concern about the back?
But if there's concern about the back, what's Carolina giving him 4 years for?
Mm-hmm. Oh, right? Listen, I don't disagree.
Like, I'm thinking to myself, I'm thinking if I'm Gardner, and again, he takes the commitment. He's moving to Raleigh. He's got his term, if not perhaps the preferred dollar. But I thought, you know, if I'm Gardner and I'm confident my back's okay, maybe I'm scared a little bit by my age because everybody's at 29, 30, suddenly weirdly getting old. But if I'm Gardner, am I not doing a one-year deal at whatever number and then trying to cash in if I have a good season on a multi-year thing with whoever?
And bank on yourself? Or do you look at it, you say, okay, what's the free agent market then going to be in a year? And we just started this conversation by talking about Torrey Krug, and he's going to be available. Is it going to be another year where the salary cap is flat before new TV money in the States comes into it? Maybe I should just take what I have now because next year is going to be too much of a risk. And if you're Carolina, you're probably saying to yourself, okay, we're bringing in Jake Gardner, somewhat of a risk depending on how you feel about the back. But this means we're going to free up someone like Justin Falk, and that's going to bring us in something else that we can use elsewhere. And listen, our 1-2, and then you throw Dougie Hamilton into that mix as well, but, you know, we have Brett Pesce, who is amongst the tops in the NHL. We have Jacob Slavin, who is no longer one of the best-kept secrets in the NHL, elite-level defenseman. Like, we're insulated there. We're good. And now we have the opportunity to move Justin Falk and bring in another piece for this team. Maybe that's the way you look at it.
And now this Leafs team, better or worse from last year? Marner in the lineup, Hyman in, Dermott in.
Should be better based on the blue line. Listen, they got, depending on what happens with Marner, they also have injuries to start the season off as well. My gut tells me better just based on bringing in Tyson Barrie, who's the zone exit machine, a full year of Jake Muzzin. I think Leafs fans are really going to like Alex Kerfoot and what he brings to the table as your third line center, who can also play wing as well. So I look at it on paper and I say to myself, and listen, Matthews is in for another year of maturity. I look at it and I say, this is a better team than they had last year.
What? Just throw me a stat line. Or describe it in a different way, Jeff, if you want. What am I looking at after game 82 heading into the playoffs with William Nylander? What have I seen this year?
I don't know if it's what you've seen as much as it might be what you remembered. Because I think Maple Leafs fans have forgot how good a player this guy is. Listen, we all know he had the rough go last year. Really rough go with the Maple Leafs. And this season.
Have they forgotten or have their expectations not been met?
Well, they weren't met. I mean, the Maple Leafs fans are very much, what have you done for me lately? What did you do in last night's game? Right? I always make the joke that this team is so bogged down by history. Every game recap should be called Yesterday in Leafs History.
But Jeff,
I think everyone's forgotten just how good William Nylander is. And you can make the argument too, if there was one player, not just on the Maple Leafs, but in the entire NHL that was dogged with worse puck luck, i.e. getting there and not getting that black thing over the red line more than William Nylander, I didn't see the guy. Like, how many crossbars and posts did this guy hit? I know the goalie union's screaming, well, that was what? That just means the shot's wide. But was there a player that was dogged with worse puck luck last year?
Yeah, I just, my feeling on it is, and if you douse me in cold water right now, steam might come up because I'm sure this is going to seem hot takey to some. But, like, William's a guy who's, if he's not scoring, you'll go a few weeks saying, what the hell is he doing?
I say that about Line A, but not about Nylander, and here's why. I don't know many people in the NHL. Connor's obviously the best at it, but that get the zone as easily as William Nylander. I can't say that about someone like Patrick Laine, where legitimately, if he's not giving you goals, he gives you nothing. Zero. That's not Nylander. Nylander gets zone fast. I think that's what he's still giving you. He's still giving you solid entries every single game.
There's something there. There's something more to his game. But after last season, if you're a fan, I think it's a trust thing right now with the Leaf fans. How much do we actually trust this guy? You're giving them this money, this term. Mm-hmm. He's
and putting
in
him
your
on
top
second,
five.
Putting him on second unit power play. Let's not forget about that too.
Well, here's the thing about, you're talking about seasons and seasons players have. The start of your season is a big part. I know some players that were very average players that would just get out to hot starts. And it was like they were in a different zone. I'd see the guy playing with the guy, played against them. But that those first 10, 15 games of a season, they just dial in. It's like he's like, no, this your first 10, 15 are so important. So you don't end up with goose eggs across the board and you get off to a hard start. When you start your season late, you miss camp, it's going to affect you. Most guys. When you miss 10 games, it's going to affect you. When you start December 1st, it's almost impossible to have the season that you want to have. And that's what he fell into.
Teams are like that too. Like you can go through a 10-game slump in January and, oh, well, they're going through a slump. You do that in October, what's wrong with, ask Todd Richards what that's like from Columbus. What it's like having a bagel 10 start. It kills you, but it's just a slice of your season.
It is a little bit, but when you start off that way, it's almost impossible to come back because I've been on a team where we've started the 1-9 and then you have this great stretch of games, but you're kind of worn out.
Just to get back to 500 or somewhere
and
close.
And then you're like, okay, now everybody's kind of doing that. You did that and that, and then it's just like you crash and burn because that stretch of games you have are so good. It took so much out of you.
You want to go 14-6 out of the gate to give yourself the cushion for the inevitable.
Well, look what happened to the Leafs last year. 20-5 and kind of cruised into the playoffs.
Good to see you in studio.
Here I am. Dragged a razor across my face. Well, actually not today, yesterday, but
don't do that.
Getting back into it.
It's a waste of time.
Yeah, I'm trying to change up the look this year. I like what you and Ziggy got going on.
Keep the trim close.
Yeah.
Good and responsible.
The problem is I get the salt and pepper right on the chin.
Yeah, but that's
I don't get up high on the cheek like you and Ziggy. I kind of look like Wolfmanish a little bit. Get the good duster, though. But
Roll with it, though. Till the bosses say, change it up, just roll with it. Ask for forgiveness later. Don't ask for permission. Ask for forgiveness later.